Joining me in the studio this morning from the Western Brass Quintet, it's horn player Lynn Folk, as well as tubist Jacob Cameron, a new name at the School of Music, and composer and guest artist for tonight's concert, Pierre Jalbert, who is going to witness the premiere of a new brass quintet as performed by the Western Brass Quintet. Thank you all for coming in this morning. Lynn, I'd like to start with you, and it's been a while since we had a chance to talk on the radio and catch up, and I was wondering if you could get me back up to speed with what's happening with the Western Brass Quintet.
Sure. The last time we were here, we performed at the International Women's Brass Conference. We gave the premier concert as part of that conference in June. And so that was a fun event. This semester, since we've, with our new tubist, Jacob Cameron, we have been rehearsing a lot in the fall, and we're primarily recording this year. We're recording pieces for brass quintet and band. And so in addition, this concert, we'll talk a lot about it, but another project that we have going on is this recording with our symphonic band at the university. They received funding to record, and we have a piece by Tony Plogue that we're recording this semester. Last semester, we recorded a piece by Erica Wazen.
Called Shadow Catcher.
Shadow Catcher. Exactly. And I'm forgetting something. Did we record another piece, or is it just Shadow Catcher?
I believe it's just Shadow Catcher.
Okay. And then the band is also recording a piece written for them, and it seems like there's another piece that I'm forgetting. But anyway, it's a large CD of pieces primarily for brass and brass quintet and band. So that's kind of those are our projects. We're talking about doing another recording in May that still needs to materialize, but we've been very busy.
I loved the two recital albums that came out on Summit Records a little while ago. That's slightly different personnel, but still they're fantastic records, and I really hope you continue that series someday as well.
Yeah, well, tonight actually is a combination of those two. That Songs and Dances, were that's a CD of pieces that were arranged primarily old English, the 16th century songs and dances arranged by members of the Western Brass Quintet. And tonight we're going to play four Monteverdi madrigals. They aren't arranged by members of the Western Brass Quintet, but it's in a similar vein to our Songs and Dances CD. And then our newest CD called Games for Brass are all pieces written for the ensemble, for the Western Brass Quintet. And we have two premieres tonight, two pieces written for the Western Brass Quintet that we're going to perform this evening. So we're very much continuing those projects.
You're well on your way to another premiere.
Yeah, exactly. Good. Yeah, we have another CD in the works.
I'd like to say hello, really, to Jacob Cameron, who is the newest brass faculty member at Western Michigan University. I didn't look up your biography at all because I just want you to, I want to be surprised. Tell me.
Well, I was the first pilot of the space shuttle. I grew up
in. Is that where you took up tuba playing those lonely hours?
That was the engine, actually. So. I grew up in Michigan. I grew up in a very small town named Mullican. Which is a population 500 outside of Grand Ledge. So I went to Grand Ledge High School. I did my undergraduate degree at Michigan State University, did my master's degree at Rice University. And then I've been teaching in Michigan quite a bit. I taught at Grand Valley State for 8 years, and I've taught at a few other universities, East Carolina University and Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. So it's nice to be back in Michigan. I've known Scott Thornburg, who's a member of the Western Brass Quintet, for 10 years. We performed together in the summers at the Bayview Music Festival. And I actually had a chance to perform a very terrifying, at least for me, concert with the Western Brass. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago for a seminar, which is our summer program, seminar performance that Deanna Swoboda couldn't be at. Where we did, you know, one rehearsal and a concert, and I was flying by the seat of my pants. And the drive home, I was still, you know, invigorated, let's put it that way. I've performed, you know, with two other professional brass quintets, the Motor City Brass Quintet and Spectrum Brass Quintet, and have been fortunate enough to play, you know, with some really great orchestras, including the Detroit Symphony and the Cincinnati Symphony. So I've had a pretty varied career, but chamber music is definitely where I feel the most at home, and I'm really feel very fortunate that I'm able to participate in that so much here at Western.
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask. Is chamber music really the thing that gives you the most thrills?
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, it's interesting, and I think a lot of musicians and probably a lot of artists go through this process, is when I was young, meaning like middle school and early high school, I almost exclusively listened to brass quintet recordings. For me in particular, the Empire Brass Quintet was kind of at their heyday at that time, and I listened to it all the time, and I was convinced at that point that I was going to be a chamber musician. And then once you get into college, you tend to be kind of pushed along the large ensemble performance path. And I ended up at Rice, which is really an orchestral training program, and spent a long time down that path, and then was kind of reintroduced to the chamber music world and couldn't be happier. I mean, it really is where I belong, you know.
Sounds like this was a decision that made sense. Lynn, was it a difficult process, or was it kind of obvious that Jacob would be a great fit?
Oh, and I want to mention that we had a national search, and to hire someone who was born and raised and worked for much of his career in Michigan, that was purely coincidental. We really had a large national search this past summer when we found out that Deanna Swoboda was offered a position at Arizona State University. That's where she is now. And we heard some terrific tuba players. But as soon as Jacob sat down and played with us, it was obvious with his intonation and the way that he fit with the group. It was just really terrific to play with a new member and have somebody who has his own ideas but also fits in so well with the ensemble right from the very beginning. So it was a real natural, easy fit for us to invite Jacob to be part of the ensemble.
Great. Yeah. And do you have some good tuba students this semester?
I do. Yeah, we've got an unusual studio. You may not be aware of this, but the tuba professor also teaches the euphonium as well. And so usually the euphonium is not an orchestral instrument. It's primarily used in bands and solo situations. And usually I have a studio, would ideally have a studio of about 6 or maybe even 5 euphoniums and about 9 or 10 tubas, and it's totally switched right now. So I have 5 tubas and 8 euphoniums, and I don't know what to do with all the euphoniums, but they're doing a great job. And, you know, I think anytime you have a transition like this, Deanna Swoboda and I we're very different people, of course, and it's a difficult transition for the students initially, but they all stuck with me. And now they're doing great, and everything seems to be coming together for them. So it's a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Well, the concert we're talking about is tonight at 7:30 in the Dalton Center Recital Hall, a concert that features 2 world premieres and music of Michael Tilson Thomas, which we'll get to, and Claudio Monteverdi in arrangements by Raymond Mays. And should I know that guy from the Empire Brass?
American Brass Quintet.
The American
He's always been with the American Brass Quintet. Trumpet player. Yeah.
Well, you brought along a concert recording that the Western Brass Quintet did some years back.
Yeah, this was in 2007, a live performance at St. Olaf College.
Oh, great.
Minnesota. Yeah.
All right, let's listen. Couple of madrigals there by Claudio Monteverdi, originally for voices and arranged by Mays.
Raymond Mays.
Raymond. Thank you, Lynn Folk, horn player for the Western Brass Quintet. And that is from a quintet concert at St. Olaf College a few years ago. And that's how they're starting tonight's concert. Starts at 7:30, and music includes another work by Michael Tilson Thomas and 2 world premieres for the Western Brass Quintet, which is extremely unusual that any concert would have more than one,
yeah.
and let alone any at all. So that's very exciting. I know, Lynn, you and I have talked before about how the repertoire for the Western, for brass quintets in general, has to be generated now.
Right.
You can do a lot of transcriptions and play a lot of older things, but it seems like since a couple of seminal ensembles got together, they started generating new commissions, and it's a huge part of the repertoire, pushing along the
right.
sound of music.
Whereas string quartets have repertoire several centuries old, really the brass quintet has only been around since the late 1940s, 1950s. And so, really our programs are either transcriptions of older music than that or new pieces. And so we focus on both. We do a lot with both of that repertoire to make a varied program.
Well, that's very fortunate that we have the composer here in the room with us today, Pierre Gelbert. Welcome again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You have been to Kalamazoo on at least one occasion. I remember a work, was it for marimba?
It was a marimba concerto.
Concerto.
Yes.
It was a delightful piece for the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra.
Correct, yeah.
And have you been here on other occasions beyond?
No, this is just, I think, my second time back. To Kalamazoo, although I have certainly have some relationships with Michigan, in that my wife is from Lansing, Michigan, and grew up in East Lansing.
And where do you live now?
I'm in Houston. I've been at Rice University in Houston for 16 years now, although I grew up on the East Coast in Vermont.
Have you written brass before?
Only in the context of orchestral music. In a way, this whole commission came about when I met Dan Mattson, the trombonist in the group, out at the Cabrillo Festival in California, in Santa Cruz, a couple years ago. And the orchestra was doing some of my orchestral music during the festival. And I guess Dan liked my music, and we started talking about a possible commission for the future. And then it happened a few months later.
Did you have to go and sort of surround yourself with the sound of brass quintet music? Or
sure, I went back and certainly listened to a lot. And, you know, being at a university with a terrific brass program, I'm certainly surrounded by great music making all the time. So, I certainly had the sound in my mind, but it is, I hadn't written a brass quintet before, and it is much different than writing a work for orchestra, which uses brass, or any other kind of ensemble. It's a very unique kind of sound.
Did you want to take advantage of the fact that they can sound extremely unified, or did you want to highlight the special sonic qualities of each?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wanted to do both. And this piece is actually in two movements. The first movement is very slow and lyrical for the most part, and the second movement it goes like a bat out of hell. It's very, very fast. But the first movement, I consciously wanted to feature some of the solo players. So towards the beginning of the movement, there are soliloquies, you could say, just short little solos for each of the instruments, mostly lyrical, where they have sort of a short moment to shine.
When you compose, are you hanging things on a melody? How does that generate your ideas?
Well, that's the question, huh? frankly, I like to start with an idea of the whole. It's hard to plug in pieces if you have no idea where they fit in the whole. I sort of like to equate it to building a house. You don't start by just putting a wall up somewhere and then when you get to the end, okay, it is whatever it is. You have a blueprint for the whole thing, at least an idea, and then you start to fill in individual ideas. But I think the titles sort of give each movement has a title. The first movement it's called Distant Fanfares. And so this is the slower lyrical movement. And actually, the two trumpet players start out off stage.
Oh, they love to do that.
So they're they're playing, you know, at least it's supposed to sound like they're playing off in the distance somewhere. And gradually, the group forms as a whole. So when you first see the piece, I actually thought about how it would look. You only see three players on the stage. So you're thinking, as an audience member, oh, maybe this is just a trio. And then you hear off in the distance these trumpets coming in. And then the second movement is called Concurrence. And it's a lot of ensemble playing together, the really quick, short, animated figures. that again go really, really fast. And it just continues like that. It's sort of breathless and almost ruthless in a way throughout the whole piece.
Have you had a chance to attend one of the rehearsals yet?
I haven't. I just got here last night, but I've been in close contact with the ensemble, and they've sent me recordings of their rehearsals. So we've gone back and forth with ideas.
Any surprises when you heard the piece move from paper to?
Well, there are always surprises when you go from what's in your head to the live performance. But it is what I hoped it would be, and I was very pleased with how things were really gelling together. I was very happy when I first heard the first recording they sent.
Were you happy to have his thoughts as you prepared the piece, or do you want to decide for yourself and then bring Pierre into the discussion?
Yeah, well, we had several rehearsals, so we were able to sort of gel our musical ideas before we sent recordings, but it was wonderful to have his feedback and thoughts. And I would like to say that as soon as we read the piece, the first reading of it, we were so excited from the very moment we started reading the piece. It was just really, you never know what you're going to get when you're commissioning a piece, a brand new piece from a composer, and we've just loved the piece from the very beginning, and it's the more we play it, we keep saying, wow, this is a great piece when we get done rehearsing it. So, and I can say, being part of a lot of new pieces for the quintet, that's not always the case. So thank you.
And I think there's no question that, it's really nice to have a little bit of feedback initially, especially, I think each composer and each individual musician, especially with dynamics, tends to interpret those things. So like, what does a piano mean in this piece versus like the way we play piano in Monteverdi versus the way we might play piano in Gelber? It's different. And so I think a lot of the initial back and forth was about dynamics and balance and things like that. It was very informative, and I think changed a little bit of how I would, at least on my own part, was thinking about how I was playing throughout the piece just from a few little snippets. So it was very useful.
It's a nice choice to put the Monteverdi first and then follow it with the premiere that way. I love the way the Renaissance music kind of really has a strong echo in modern day music, mm-hmm. with the strange harmonies and things like that. Mm-hmm. Is that true for this piece? Do they work well together?
Yeah, I think so. And we're going to kind of, lull them a little bit and then jump on them, I think.
We also wanted to feature the piece, and we thought earlier in the program that was very conscious to put it second. We thought that was the best spot for the piece. So yeah.
Tickets and more information on this concert are available at MillerAuditorium.com, and more information also at WMISH.edu/music. Tickets available at the door. The concert starts tonight at 7:30, featuring two world premieres. Pierre, we have, or I have a piece queued up, a piece of your chamber music called Visual Abstract, and would you mind saying a few words about the second movement, Dome of Heaven?
Well, this piece is a piece I wrote for the Pittsburgh New Music Ensemble, conducted by Kevin Noe. And this second movement, called Dome of Heaven, was inspired by the time I spent in Rome. I spent a year in Rome in the year 2000 on a Rome Prize fellowship. And
you won the Prix de Rome?
Yeah, well, there's an American Prix de Rome.
Cool.
And, so, whoever gets it gets to spend a year at the American Academy in Rome, and you're surrounded by other artists there. There are architects and visual artists, and so you're in the city of Rome with all these wonderfully creative people. And one thing that I loved about Rome was the churches. There are 900 churches in Rome, and almost every one of them has a spectacular dome. It might be a very large dome or a very small dome. The church that the particular church that inspired this piece is called San Carlino. It's a church that was designed by Borromini during the Baroque period, and it's actually a very small church, but everything about it is just incredibly gorgeous. The outside of the church instead of just a flat surface, has a kind of S curve on the facade. And then you go in, and the whole facade, like many of Borromini's churches, is totally white. And you look up into this dome, and the dome is all white, but incarved in the dome is different kinds of geometrical shapes. There are crosses and trapezoids and all sorts of shapes that get smaller and smaller as they go to the apex of the dome. So the dome, to me, actually looks bigger than it really is, and it feels like when you look up into it that you're looking into infinity. And so that was the idea behind this piece.
Music by my guest, Pierre Jalbert, who is a guest tonight, listening to the world premiere by the Western Brass Quintet of a new piece called Brass Quintet. The movements are distant fanfares and concurrents. And if I could have you react a little to the piece with me, Pierre, you were talking about having a concept before you begin, having a blueprint, and I could clearly hear it in that. It's a shape.
It's kind of an arc.
Yes, an arc.
It ends in a similar way to how it begins.
Yeah. I like the way you use sustained tones to get that sort of eternal or, universal kind of sound. And then a little bit of dissonance in the middle there.
Yeah, it certainly builds in the middle, and that was another sort of shape for the piece I had before starting it. And with that particular ensemble, there's a piano, there's a percussionist playing the vibraphone, which have pedals, which can sustain things for however long you'd like. There are a couple string players in that ensemble as well. When you're writing a piece exclusively for winds, like brass instruments, you really have to think about breathing. Obviously, that's the big difference. I'm a pianist, so although having written a lot for winds, in orchestral music, I've certainly thought that way before, but still it's much different than writing for piano or other kinds of instruments where the physicality of having to breathe doesn't come in. Isn't obviously quite as important as it is with winds.
It's nice that you're not requiring them to circular breathe. Yeah.
Hopefully I didn't write those whole notes too long.
We're talking with the Western Brass Quintet's Lynn Folk, as well as Jacob Cameron, new professor of tuba at Western Michigan University, and Pierre Jalbert, who is from Rice University, and his new work is the second work on the program tonight, which continues with Michael Tilson Thomas' work called Street Song, which we'll end with. But I wanted to ask about the fourth and second world premiere on the program.
Yeah. Well, the piece is written by Turin. And interestingly enough, and I don't remember the date, maybe Dr. Folk can help me on this, but Scott Thornburg is also playing a concerto by Turin with a band, I think, in a week and a half or something. It's very close. So it's kind of strange that we're doing two new pieces at the same time by the same composer. I'd say the piece isn't, as big of a piece. It goes by very quickly. It's seven pages of music. I think it lasts about 5 minutes.
Yeah, so
it's a lot of notes packed into those 5 minutes. It's a very exciting piece, and it was written as part of a consortium that was done nationally, spearheaded by Phil Smith, who's the principal trumpeter with the New York Philharmonic.
Joseph Turin, can you tell me anything about him, where he's from, and his other...
I do have its bio here, but what primarily he seems to live and work primarily in New York, and he's worked a lot with closely with the New York Philharmonic as well as players of the New York Philharmonic. I know him primarily as a trumpet composer. I think for brass, he's kind of known amongst us brass players as someone who writes a lot for trumpet. And I think he's worked closely with Phil Smith of the New York Philharmonic to make a lot of those works happen.
And if Dr. Spradling were here, I think he would be able to tell us about the number of symphonic band works that
they've
played by Turin.
Yeah.
So lots of notes, not too long.
I don't know if that was the most engaging description of a piece that I could give, but it's a very exciting piece. You know, it's interesting when we first read it, and I think that as brass players, sometimes we do this instinctively, is when we hear dissonance or if the lines are really disjunct and kind of angular, we tend to play them very aggressively just because we're brass players, that's kind of what we do. And we'd played it a few times and then kind of had this epiphany in a rehearsal that we were doing it completely wrong, basically, and that it's not actually a really angry, aggressive piece at all, but it's more like a celebratory, like circus type of piece, I guess, for lack of a better description. That was kind of interesting. You know, that happens with new pieces. And sometimes I wonder with pieces that have been recorded and you listen to the recording before you start playing them, if maybe if the first group interpreted it a certain way, it kind of lasts for that way for, you know, all eternity. Everybody kind of follows those footsteps.
Right.
So it's nice to have be able to put your imprint on something early, and especially with a group like Western Brass Quintet, you know, which I obviously very grateful to be able to play with them. And it's just a very thoughtful musical group. And so when things like that happen, people aren't, you know, stuck on their old interpretations necessarily of it. As a group, we kind of came together and realized that we needed to, as a group, change our vision of this piece. And it happened quickly and I think very effectively. So I feel a lot more positive about the performance we're going to give tonight than I did after the first rehearsal of the piece. So.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Very, very natural for a performer to completely revisit their interpretation of it, of a work, and want to even re-record. There's your Glenn Gould out there.
Right.
So, any last thoughts on this? Wait, we need to talk about the Michael Tilson Thomas, actually. Yeah. Michael Tilson Thomas, great American conductor, San Francisco Symphony, and I put him like right next to Leonard Bernstein and Aaron Copland. Mm-hmm. Like, he knew both of them very well.
Yeah, and he's often compared to Leonard Bernstein, and we're so lucky that he's written a brass ensemble piece. This piece was written for the Empire Brass Quintet and premiered by them in Tokyo in 1988. And it actually exists in many forms. The piece as it's published and notated, traditionally amongst brass players, there is a cut that we all know about. and so we're playing the piece with a cut. But the piece also exists for large brass ensemble. It's just one of those pieces that we're so fortunate to have in the repertoire. And a lot of people, in the way that it sounds, compare it to Leonard Bernstein, the way that the music sounds as well. It's a very beautiful little gem in our repertoire. I shouldn't say little. It's a big piece.
It's a very big piece.
Yeah, it's very substantial work.
Yeah, very substantial.
So are we on the street in New York or in the streets of San Francisco here?
Well, he says in his program notes, and I think this is interesting, street song is a simple, nostalgic, street corner sort of piece. It is the riffs of five guys from a neighborhood somewhere midway between Bali and Bulgaria. So it sort of conjures up everything.
Well, that's totally going to change how I play tonight.
You should write and ask him to change that to Kalamazoo to
exactly,
Timbuktu.
Exactly, right. I like that.
West Maine.
Well, I'd like to thank all of you for coming in this morning. It's been been such a pleasure to learn about tonight's concert, which sounds very exciting.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's finish with the Empire Brass and Street Song by Michael Tilson Thomas.